Hi, Matthew. I'm the lead pastor here at Cedar Ridge. Thank you so much for joining us again this morning. We're going to wrap up a series today called Reimagining Church. And if you remember last week, we were looking at the struggle that the church had in its earliest days with the whole issue of unity, staying together. And we looked at two approaches that it took. One was a religious approach, which was seeking unity through conformity and control. And then there was the approach of Paul, who felt like the essence of following Jesus was all about freedom and inclusivity, and that's how we would be one. That's how we'd keep unity. And really, the church's history for the last 2,000 years, in many respects, has been a struggle with issues of power and control. And you know, by the 4th century, Constantine, the Roman emperor, converted to Christianity and made Christianity the state religion, and that gave a huge amount of power to the church, and it didn't necessarily really handle it all that well. Later in that century, there were councils that met to determine what was right, what was wrong, what's theologically correct. Up to that point, there'd been a lot of diversity and different perspectives about Jesus, about the nature of God, the nature of reality. But these councils made some decisions. You can understand, they wanted to bring about some conformity, and they made some decisions that if you didn't adhere to, they made some statements that if you didn't agree to, then you were either pushed out, treated as a heretic, and sometimes even treated very violently. And for sure, the church does not have a great track record when it comes to the abuse of power and the abuse of authority in sometimes very violent ways. There were lots of schisms and divisions. We also see evolving with not just with the church's complicity, but sometimes outright proactivity. We see things like anti-Semitism, the Crusades, inquisitions that would hunt people down based on what were viewed as heretical beliefs. We have colonialism and slavery that were endorsed by the church, and very often not only endorsed but advocated by the church. So we have this really dark track record when it comes to power and authority. And I think it's very easy for us to look back and think, oh, we would not have been like that. But I think we have to be conscious, as we're thinking ourselves about reimagining church, that we'd always guard against power and control. But also, as we look back, there were renewal movements throughout that time of people who recognized where the church was losing its way and wanted to get back to the essence of what it meant to follow Jesus. I mean, a huge one of those, obviously, was the Protestant Reformation in the 16th century. But what we see happening is these renewal movements themselves become institutionalized and resort to power and control. Protestantism did that in the subsequent decades and centuries. Itself became very violent and controlling. And then we see also, you know, in that era that the Bible was being translated into local languages, the century before the printing press had been invented. So suddenly people had access to the Bible, and you would think that would kind of bring people back to what it really means to follow Jesus. But what we see happening is there were lots of different opinions, of course, about what does the Bible mean? How do we interpret this passage or this saying of Jesus? And those differences led to people pushing others out because of the disagreement or withdrawing themselves, and a kind of sense of elitism at times. Again, power and control playing its way into the life of the church. What we're going to do today is kind of look at both of those issues. We're going to try to be honest about the temptation of power and control and an authoritarian approach, and how can we guard against that as we think about reimagining church. But we're also going to look back on renewal and think through how can we stay in a place of renewal? How can we be followers of Jesus who don't become institutionalized, who don't resort to power and control? And to help me discuss that a little bit, I'm going to bring in via Zoom our founding pastor, Brian McLaren, who led this church, started this church along with several other families, and led the church for the first 24 years. I've only been here 15 years, so I took over from Brian, but he led for 24 years and then went on to an international ministry of writing and speaking, and has this, I think, really great broad perspective, global perspective about the church, both historically and in the present day. So we're just going to explore this a little bit. So let's welcome Brian as I bring him in. Hi, Brian. Great to see you. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Good to virtually be with you.
Yeah, thanks for being here. I know we're all excited to hear from you. I mean, first of all, just how are you doing? How are you and the family? Obviously, we're in these crazy times. How are you keeping? Yeah.
Well, listen, we've been healthy. We've been well. It's been, frankly, it's been nice for me to not be getting on airplanes since first week of March. And so all is well in that way. Obviously, I think all of us share a sense of both empathy for the pain that so many people are going through, including, I'm sure, some folks who are listening in right now, and also just for the struggles in our country and our world. So, you know, personally, we're doing just fine, and I think we're sort of feeling some of the weight that all of us feel.
And you, are you still speaking? I mean, are you doing much on Zoom? You say you're not traveling, but you're still probably busy, I would imagine.
Yeah, I think I'm speaking at three churches today, actually. but, you know, it's one of the nice things about being able to record things virtually. So, yeah. And yeah, I've been keeping really busy. As you probably know, I'm doing some work with Center for Action and Contemplation. So I probably spent maybe 6 or 7 weeks of the year so far. The first two or three in person in Albuquerque, and all the rest have been by Zoom. So. Yeah, but it's all good. And I'm working on a couple of books and all of that's been super rewarding too.
Cool. Well, we're in a series at the moment, we're wrapping up today actually, called Reimagining Church. Just looking at what the current challenges we're in, what does church look like in this context? And we've been looking back a little bit at the history of the church right from the beginning. Last week, we reflected on two ways of keeping unity. And we looked at the letter to the Galatians. We were looking there at unity that comes through control, bringing about conformity, versus Paul's view, which is that unity comes through freedom, which brings about inclusivity. Yeah. You obviously have history with this church, right? 24 years of history with this church as a pastor. And then you've got sort of broader experience and perspective now with what you're doing. Share with us a little bit, maybe first of all, just from a pastoral perspective, how have you wrestled with that tension in community?
Well, listen, it's a huge, huge question. I wrote a book years ago called Secret Message of Jesus, and I talked about Jesus' strategy of purposeful inclusion. But when you include people that other people exclude, your act of inclusion means that you're excluded by other people. So it's why Jesus could both say, blessed are the peacemakers, and I have not come to bring peace but a sword. Now, when he said, I've not come to bring peace but a sword, then he said something like this, my coming, my message, and so on, will set at odds like a father and son, a mother and daughter, and so on. Interestingly, each of the pairs are older generation, younger generation. And I think in that way, Jesus represents the prophetic leadership of the new generation. You know, we forget that he was 33 years old when he retired from ministry. So he was the young man with a new vision for a new generation. Yeah. And the older generation that was used to certain things being done a certain way and was unable to shift their categories couldn't accept them. Maybe the other thing I'd throw into the mix is, and I should say, in my lifetime, you know, I was born in 1956. I was right around the time of the Montgomery bus boycott and the beginnings of the civil rights movement. So in many ways, my life's the years of my life have corresponded with this struggle for white people of broadening their span of acceptance and grappling with the issue of true equality across race, across gender. We still are dealing with across class and citizenship and sexual orientation and all of these different things. But this radical message of acceptance was so profound to the unity that Jesus was talking about. But here's the trick. Demagogues and authoritarian leaders through history, religious and political, build their unity through opposition. Either it's a minority that says the majority is evil and we're the pure remnant, or the majority says, oh, there's some minority that's our great enemy. And this act of building unity of us against them, it seems to me, is the deep and fundamental thing that Jesus is rejecting. And it's been the challenge of the church to always be at that forefront of saying, who is the society at large marginalizing, scapegoating, building unity against? And how can we expand that circle of unity to include both us and them?
Yeah, yeah. And obviously you see, I mean, absolutely, Jesus was so passionate about that. And you see that passion, I think, in Paul's writings.
Yes.
He got that, it seems. He knew that was the essence of Jesus and kind of wouldn't back down on it. But obviously that got him into hot water as well. So yes. I guess, again, maybe even from your sort of pastor experience, how practically, how do we get that balance, or if that's the right word, or how do we find the sweet spot of really taking stands on issues of inclusivity?
Yes. Well,
creating more polarity. How does that work out in communities?
Yes. You know, because I see Jesus as a young generation radical who is, and Paul does the same thing. Remember, he says, forgetting what lies behind, we strain forward to reach what's ahead of us. It's the sense that the best days are not in our past. The best days are in our future if we will just open up to them. The kingdom of God is at hand, meaning you can reach out and take it. Yeah. So this sense of leaning forward, I think the challenge is and especially in religious communities that are so obsessed with the past and obsessed with authority figures in the past, what does it mean for us to say, what is God doing on the frontier of the future? How do we go there? How do we join God there? What that means almost always is going to be conflict. It's not into a kumbaya moment. It's going into conflict. Here in the United States, when segregation was the law of land and people had the courage to go sit at a lunch counter, when black people would sit at a lunch counter and white people would come and sit with them and say, we're going to engage in civil disobedience here. We're going to be, as John Lewis said, we're going to get into good trouble.
Yeah.
We're going to have holy chutzpah. Yeah. Ironically, the people who have the courage to do that, to be the first, it stirs things up. It feels like conflict, but you're actually preparing the way for peace. If many folks at Cedar Ridge knew my parents, and my parents had a habit of, my mother would, when I was a little boy and we'd go to church on Sunday morning, she'd always make a big lunch and have the table all set, and we didn't know who would come home for lunch. They would look for someone at church to invite. And you can guarantee if there was a black family, there was a predominantly white church, but there might be a black family there visiting or new to the church, or if there was, you know, someone from another country, they would be invited. And I lived in a predominantly white neighborhood, and our neighbors would see we were the house that was always having, you know, different people over for dinner. Well, that act of opening your table, I think that's how we do it. I think we build the relationships. Now, it's a little more complicated in our increasingly pluralistic culture. But, you know, in my last couple of years there at Cedar Ridge, we developed that relationship with the mosque up the road. And that also, it seems to me, is a way we do this. We build relationships. We extend hospitality to others, and we accept hospitality when they invite us. And we come into one another's spaces. We have a meal with each other. I think that's how it's done. Maybe one other thing I could say, Matthew, is that when the criticism comes, because it's not if, it's when the misunderstanding, when the criticism comes, when we can respond both firmly and graciously, that I think is what really is that's the electricity.
Yeah. Well, let's come back to something you mentioned earlier. So conflict is inevitable, right? You say, I mean, if we're leaning into the future, if we're following Jesus, conflict is inevitable. So in some sense then, really the issue becomes not so much who's got the genius idea to resolve the problem so everybody agrees, but rather who can do conflict best? Who's that working through the differences in a loving kind of way? speak to that a little bit in terms of, I mean, we're in such a polarized society at the moment. Okay. I mean, we, you know, I'm sure within church communities, there's conflict. I mean, look at the nation as a whole.
Yes.
How do we do that in a loving way? I mean, what could that look like?
Well, look, I think there's some inner work we have to do first, Matthew, and maybe I could tell just two quick stories in this regard. It would have been around 2001, 2002. I wrote a book called A New Kind of Christian, and it's the first book that got me really hostile reviews, like you're going to burn in hell kind of reviews, right? And I was, for a very respected paper at the time or magazine at the time, I was invited to give a response to a super hostile review that had been written about the book and about me. And I worked for days, and it was like 11 o'clock at night. I had to send this thing in. And it was just so defensive and so passive aggressive. And I was about to hit send, and I just said, I can't hit send. I don't want to spend my life defending myself in this way. And I literally threw it out and started over again. And decided that instead of defending myself, I would use a criticism as an opportunity to clarify my message. And I think that's one of the things we can do, is we can, when there's misunderstanding, we can use it as an opportunity to clarify our message, because very often we're being attacked for the wrong thing. And if we can achieve disagreement so that people are attacking us for what, you know, makes sense, then we can just graciously, well, the term that really helps me is we have the courage to differ graciously. Three elements: courage to differ graciously. We define ourselves. So that's the first one. And then the second one is, in fact, it wasn't too long after that, many people would remember someone named Dallas Willard, who was a dear friend and kind of mentor of mine. And once Dallas gave me this old tattered mimeograph sheet for people who remember, or it was Ditto, if anybody remembers those Ditto reproductions. And it was a prayer by a Serbian Orthodox bishop, and it's a long story, I won't go into it, but it was a prayer for enemies. And Dallas just gave it to me and said, I think you're going to need this. And that used to sit on my desk, and every time I got a critical review or somebody angry at me, I would read that prayer. And here's what that prayer did for me. It helped me realize that sometimes when you're doing this peacemaking work that gets you in trouble because your arms embrace broader than some people would like you to, when you understand my problem isn't my enemy, my problem is my reaction to my enemy. So now I have to do the inner work of letting my ego have its temper tantrum and have its fit and have its anxiety, but just let that go, you know, and then say, okay, I'm here to love. How can I be a vessel for God's love to flow through? How can I have the courage to differ graciously in this situation?
That's cool. Yeah, we've been talking a lot recently about just how powerful fear is, right? I mean, I'm thinking, as you shared there, you're responding to that criticism to the book. I mean, we're afraid. When we're criticized, we're afraid. We're afraid of being wrong or being seen to be wrong, or and so dealing with fear in our own hearts seems like a prerequisite to be able to love in that kind of way and be a source of healing. And I think you mentioned John Lewis, and you think of the civil rights movement, thinking Martin Luther King, like the amount of fear that they had to overcome and wrestle with and take responsibility for in their own lives. It's just it's incredible. Tall order, and you see that obviously with Jesus. I mean, I think, you know, facing down fear in order to love. Something else you mentioned earlier, I want to come back to, because we've been a little bit earlier in this service, we were thinking back about church history, and it's not a great track record of how to use power and control in loving ways, right? So, but at the same time, there were renewal movements all the time. And, you know, renewal movements are often minorities that can sometimes even themselves be a little sort of elitist. But there's also been many wonderful ones. How do you think, because you obviously see a lot of the church in your speaking, traveling, when you're doing that, and you're writing, you've got a broad perspective. So when you look ahead, how can we as a church at large guard against power and control?
Yeah.
And then, I suppose sort of an adjunct question there would be, and how do we stay in a state of renewal? Because it seems like renewal movements eventually become institutionalized and then back to square one. So speak to that a little bit.
Sure. Boy, I've thought about that a lot, Matthew, and it's a great question. It's a difficult question. I think the most useful thing I could say is I think we should change our metaphor. We should change our frame. And let me explain what I mean. A lot of Christians, whether you're Catholic, Protestant, whatever, have had this idea that we've got it right, or our tradition had it right, or Martin Luther had it right, or Thomas Aquinas had it right, or whoever had it right. And then we start to sort of lose that, and we've got to get it back. And we lose it, we got to get it back. I've lost that framing. I think that framing is not only unhelpful, I think it's positively dangerous. And I would, another way, the way they describe it is the slippery slope. We were up here at the top of the mountain, and now we start sliding down the slope, and we look at all those other people who slid down the slope. Terrible metaphor. Let's change the metaphor and say, we start at the bottom of the slope and we're climbing and we make it to the top of that mountain. As soon as we get to the top of the mountain, guess what? Our call is to get ready because there's another mountain after that and another mountain after that. We're never done. And our job is never to be right. Being right has this idea that we've arrived, now we've got it. No, we are so far from ever being right. Our job is to keep growing. Our job is to face the next challenge. Look, any of us who are parents know about this. You know, you bring home a baby. If you ever think you're going to get it right as a parent, you're going to be a horrible parent. Because as soon as you're good at being a parent of a three-month-old, the baby's 6 months old. Now you got to learn a new set of skills. And then the baby's a year old. Then the baby's five, then 10. And even, you know, those of us who are older and have adult children, our relationship continues to change. Yeah. And I think it's that way for the church and the world, where everything is changing. And if we could just get any of this idea of our mind, out of our mind, that we finally got it right, we've almost got it right, or we used to have it right. No, our job is to be faithful, to keep growing, to keep moving forward. That's why Jesus said, follow me, not join me at the top of the mountain.
Right. And you started off by saying that Jesus was always leaning forward, always moving ahead. So like at a personal level, how do you do that? Like how do you stay in that leaning forward place? What are some practices maybe, or just some postures?
Yeah. There? Well, you know, I think a huge part of it, Matthew, is that many years ago, in fact, during the years when I was pastor there at Cedar Ridge, or part of the team there, I had to get my theology all deconstructed because I inherited all of those assumptions about if we could just do this and this and this, we'd get it right, you know? And people kept coming along with the new fad about what the thing you had to get right was in order to get there. And there's really something of not just changing the thing you have to get right, but throwing out that whole framework entirely. And then saying, God is in the creative process with the whole earth, not just human beings, but with the whole earth, and that God loves the whole earth and human beings are part of it. How can we join God in God's dreams for the earth and our part in it? That theological shift really liberates a person from many of those false assumptions. So that's one thing I would say, Matthew. Second thing I would say is, especially in these times, we have the challenge of not being weary in well-doing and not being worn out and burned out and embittered and drained, you know. So a part of this means the spiritual practice of knowing when it's your time to be in the fray and be in the struggle. And then when it's your time to say, hey, I need a rest. I need to find the things that recharge me. I need to back off for a little while. And that sense that, you know, it's the reality of Sabbath. There's time to work. There's a time to rest. There's a time to press forward. There's a time to catch your breath. There's a time to advance. There's a time to retreat and reflect. And keeping that balance, I think, has been one of the things that's helped me stay in the forward-leaning mode.
That's cool. I think, for us here, I think community is also a huge part there, where we're not just on our own, we're not struggling on our own, but we can step back while others step forward and get that kind of power.
Yes.
You know, community is such a powerful thing. Brian, we're pretty much time up here, but I just want to say to you, like we met, I think it was like 98, 99, so it was a long time ago when I was out in Cincinnati, you know, pastoring out there, and you came out, and I remember us going for coffee. And
yes.
You, like, I always thought, like, some of my perspectives, my beliefs, if you like, were always a little bit, I felt like I was a little bit on the edge, wasn't always sure I could be fully honest about where I was coming from, about church and what it meant to follow Jesus. And I remember that conversation was very significant for me in just feeling like, oh, it's okay, I'm not the only one. It's, you know, I can breathe again. And, you've got a lot more influence now, and you've written a lot more. So I know you've done that for an awful lot of people. So I just want to thank you for doing that. And I think what you shared this morning will help people in that way in our community, just knowing that they're not alone and that there's hope. So keep doing what you're doing. We love you and very proud of you.
Well, Matthew, let me just say, when I heard that you all were doing a series, Reimagining Church, I felt so proud and gratified of you toward you all, because that's exactly what we need. Churches that are saying, we're never done. The new wine has to always flow into new wineskins. Especially COVID is teaching us, we need flexibility. We need resilience. And none of us know what the future holds, but it requires the spirit that you guys have. So I'm so grateful we're in this together, and keep up the great work.
Yeah. Thanks, Brian. Thanks so much. We'll see you soon.
Bye.
Let's just reflect a little bit on that conversation. Let's look at one of the scriptures that Brian referenced. It's in Philippians chapter 3. And here's what Paul says in verse 12. I have not yet reached my goal, and I am not perfect, but Christ has taken hold of me. So I keep on running and struggling to take hold of the prize. My friends, I don't feel that I have already arrived, but I forget what is behind and I struggle for what is ahead. So as we think about our desire to stay in a place of renewal, to stay in a place of openness and vulnerability with God, to maintain imaginative space, if you like, open space for church, for theology, for our faith, for ourselves. What does that look like? And what does it mean to lean into the future like that? What does it mean to pursue the prize in that respect? So I've just got a few thoughts I'm going to share here. Some of these are reflections on the conversation we just had. Some of them are more about the series as a whole. But the first one is this: let go of fear. I think we're seeing how instrumental fear is in so much of our lives. Religious life, political life, personal lives. I often reflect on what would my life look like if I wasn't afraid. I think it would look very different. We're afraid of being wrong. We're afraid of being misunderstood. We're afraid perhaps of being right and having to take a stand on issues and the conflict that might come about from that and the consequences of that, which will be very uncomfortable. Fear plays into our defensiveness. It can make us violent. It can make us go on the attack. So fear is crucial. So if we were to let go of fear, what would that look like? So let's let go of fear. Secondly, let's let go of control. I think very related to fear, but I think our tendency is to want to stay where we are in the present, in the understood world, if you like, the comfortable world, the world that we can handle. Or think that we can handle, and whereas Jesus is calling us into the future, into new experiences, new understandings, new territory, new challenges, we need to grow. It's a journey, it's a process, and are we willing to let go of control and sort of move into the unknown and the mysterious at times? Thirdly, let's remain in community. We need each other. I think we're seeing that just about every week in this series, how important community was to those early followers and how important it is to us. We need the encouragement from one another, the support from one another. We need to be challenged. We need to hear alternative perspectives. We need to love one another. As we think about the pandemic and how it's separated us in many respects, it's still possible for us to be together. In some instances physically, and even if not physically, we can still have that connection and that interaction. And I think we're seeing how precious and how important that is. Fourthly, knowing when to rest. I thought Brian brought that point up very importantly. And actually, in a couple of weeks, we're going to be starting a series called Recentering, which is all about self-care, how important it is to look after ourselves, especially amid all the stress and strain of life at the moment with the pandemic, the polarization, the politicization, the injustice that we're seeing and experiencing day in, day out. And I think for all kinds of different reasons, for each of us, we're very often exhausted, and we need to know when to step back and to rest, and when to step forward. Rest is crucial, it seems, to remaining in a healthy place and a renewed state. Let's be hopeful. That sounds like such a platitude, even as I say it. But hope is not a feeling. Hope is an attitude, it's a posture. So let's be that, so let's embody it. Let's never give up, no matter how dark it may seem, no matter how bleak the future may seem. There's times when it's probably felt very easy just to give up and deny things, to hide away, to run away. But part of being in a state of renewal, part of being imaginative, is being hopeful. So let's take that posture. And then finally, as we say every week, let's never stop loving. I thought it was interesting what Brian said there about perhaps the way forward is not about finding agreement, but rather finding a loving way of handling conflict. And it's not easy, it's messy, it's difficult, but it's not about compromise, but it's about love. And can we work through the issues we care most passionately about? Can we work for lasting change and do it in a really loving way? If we stop loving, I think we will resort back to power and control. We'll resort back to violence. We'll resort back to hatred. But if we can remain in that loving place, which is it's a discipline, it means being very intentional about it. But if we can remain in that place, then there is hope. I think then we can let go of fear, then we can let go of control, then we will love one another in community, and we will be able to take care of ourselves as well. So let's never give up on love. So I hope that's been helpful. We're going to take communion now, and some of the students in our high school group are going to lead us through that. So if you want to get some bread and wine or some water and crackers, whatever you use for communion, let's get those ready and celebrate communion together.